time for 3.5 minutes drive-by.
There's still some things I wanted to talk about in Paragimel Pusik Beis. We talked about the different views, whether Haman made himself into Avodah Zarah, whether he attached it to his clothing, whether he erected an Avodah Zarah. And also we discussed Targum's reasons why Mordechai wouldn't bow down to Haman or to the Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is Pashit. To Haman he wouldn't bow down because Haman's a slave. If Haman made himself into Avodah Zarah, he's not going to bow down to someone that made himself into Avodah Zarah. If Haman had it on his clothing, so he's not going to bow down to that. There's a Sfasemes, a commentary from the Ger Rebbe. The Sfasemes on this pasuk. There's something I once wanted to research. Persian Minhagim in the Torah. You know, we've come across a number of Minhagi Paras in the Torah. You know, there was the Persian Minhag of that goblet that they have by each meal. Did you have to finish it or die trying? You know, Persian goblet. And all the Svasemis makes a statement. He said in Persian society, the minhag was that people bowed to each other. I guess he means Islamic society. They bow.
They don't bow.
They bow. Persians bow. They bow to each other. That's the way you show respect. Someone, a dignitary passes by, they bow. And you see, this is a part of the day-to-day society. And based on that, this Fasemis asks a question. Why did Haman have to work it out that there would be an explicit command that the subjects of the king should bow down to him? They would bow anyway. Why do you have to say it? Isn't it better if it just gets left unsaid? Isn't it more covered? You walk by, they bow. And he has to have it inscribed in a book of law that they must bow to him? What was the point? And again, the pasuk pshat is that someone that's about covered, about gaiva. So then he wants it clear. There's a law that you must bow to me, and that goes along with everything else that Bali gaiva want. That in their search for infinite covered, for infinite honor, like there's no limits, they end up disgracing themselves with the very honor that they seek to attain. Because if somebody walks by and everyone bows down to him, naturally, that is a show of respect. If they're doing it because they have to, if he's the one that made the law, so then when they bow down to him, it's the same thing as kicking him in the pants. One of my rabbeim, Rav Moshe Aaron Stern, told us of someone in a shul. They went over to the gabbai. He felt he was an important person. He probably had certain accomplishments. But he told the gabbai that when you call me up for an aliyah, I want you to call me up with the title of Rav Again. And the gabbai said, you know, other people, we don't do that, so we just, you know, everyone's a rebbe or whatever, a rav. He said, well, everyone else, you can do that, but when you call me, I want to be a rav again. So he's being a raid of Acher Kavod. And what impression does he make? He's losing any Kavod that there ever was for him. The Radif Acher Kavod, that's a Kavod blinds a person. Radif Acher Kavod has no limits, and there's no rules. Can't be contained. And it goes into ridiculous proportions because there are no proportions. So why did Haman have it rooted in law? Why was it important to Haman to have it rooted in law? Because the Pashup Shot is, he perceived it as a bigger covet. But the Svasemis gives us an insight. Haman hated Mordechai. He hated Mordechai. He knew Mordechai for a while. Haman hated Mordechai. He wanted to kill Mordechai. He needed a pretense. Until then, Haman was a common man, but now Ahasuerus just elevated him to the peerage. He became a lord. He was elevated. Haman knew Mordechai is not going to bow down. Not to bow down to a dignitary in Persian society is not a crime. It's a show of respect to do it. Not to do it is not a crime. It's something which it's expected everyone does it. It's not a crime. He knew Mordecai wasn't going to bow. He knew it. He knew with certainty Mordecai is not going to bow. So this is part of his plot to get rid of Mordecai. Make it a law. And he knows Mordecai is not going to do it. So now instead of Mordecai just making a display or showing disrespect to Haman, he's disobeying an explicit command of the king. He's admired by Malchus, he's rebelling against the king, and he's liable to be put to death.
It's a pretty minor rebellion.
There's no such thing as a minor rebellion with when you're dealing with kings. Any infraction of law, any offense against the king's honor in a minute's house more, the king has the right to put him to death. That's the din of Amalek. That's a good question. How did Mordecai get away with it? So let's go on. Let's go on a little bit, and we'll try and answer that. But before we do that...
They don't answer that on the prom tape.
Yeah. Well, of course the answer is it's a shkacha pratis, because Hashem didn't want him to die. But you want to know in what way Hashem worked. I don't know in what way Hashem worked. I'll tell you an interesting shot from Yenis and Ibishitz that might answer your question. It won't answer your question according to all the Mefarshim, but this is a shot which I didn't see anywhere else. Yenis and Ibishitz said that when Mordecai and Esther, when they found out about this law, they knew exactly what it meant. They figured it out right away. And they knew Mordecai's in great danger. Mordecai's not going to bow to Haman. Esther went to Achashverosh and had him annul the decree. It was annulled. Only in Mordecai's case. Everyone else in the kingdom has to bow down. Mordecai doesn't have to bow down.
Wouldn't it seem suspicious that Amalek is going to help out Mordecai?
There's a lot of things that are suspicious. And that Mordecai is always there. And that, you know, and then she made a Sanhedrin there. And Mordecai is the one that told her of the plot of the king. Yeah. He just didn't get it. Achashverosh didn't get it. If someone is not supposed to find out something, they don't find out. There's a mahalach, there's a way he doesn't find out. But if Hashem doesn't want him to know, he doesn't find out. Same thing, why didn't Yaakov Avinu know that Yosef was a Mitzrayim? Why couldn't the brothers figure out that Yosef was Yosef? Hashem didn't want him to find out, so they didn't find out.
He had a beard.
Hashem didn't know. That was the way that Hashem used that they shouldn't find out. With this, he answers a question. There's a question that all the Mepharshim ask. The Pasuk says, Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtakaveh. He will not bow down. He will not prostrate himself. And it's curious why it's stated in the future tense. It's lashon asid. At the most, you could say on what he's not doing. He didn't bow down. He isn't bowing down.
He would never
bow down. You know, that's something which is... You're taking liberty with the future. How do you know? I mean, one mahalak is the Torah doesn't have that problem because the Torah knows. Torah knows the future. Torah could be written in future tense. But the Rebbeinu Snabish, it says, has his own answer.
We say about people like that person would never give in.
We could say, this is Nevuah. This is a Kisver Kodesh. This is Torah. So the Rebbe Anderson says that if Achashverosh nullified the decree against Mordecai, so then there's no longer any pressure on him to bow down. So the future tense is indicative that the pressure's off. He's not going to bow down. He never bowed down. He's not bowing down. He never will bow down because there's no reason for him to bow down. The law is off. That's how he answers it. By far the biggest kiddush that I've seen in the entire Megillah Esther is in the Megillah Starm's comments to this pasuk. Tremendous chiddush. It's by far the biggest chiddush that I've seen in the era. This is he asks a different question. You know, we all know that for idolatry, one is mechuyev to put his life in danger.
This is the Malbim.
This is the Megillah Starm. Rabbi Yaakov Loberbaum, the author of the Kehillas Yaakov and the Sivus HaMishpat. This is Pasuk Beis. Paragim of Pasuk Beis. For Avodah Zarah, one is chayav to surrender his life. If he's chas v'shalom put in a situation, he has to choose between Avodah Zarah and his life. He's supposed to choose to give up his life. It's one of the Gimel Averis Chamurais, Asher Nemar Aleim, Yehar Gval Yavar. And you know, according to many of the Pshatim, we said there was true Avodah Zarah here. In the Targum, there was one Pshat which we saw in the Targum that there was both. There was Avodah Zarah because he erected an Avodah Zarah, and then there was respect to him because he stood near the Avodah Zarah. And the Targum says that Mordechai didn't bow down to the Avodah Zarah because it's Avodah Zarah, and he didn't bow down to Haman because it was a slave. So there are Pshatim, there are existing commentaries that it wasn't Avodah Zarah. So there's certainly no Yehar Gval Yavar if it's not Avodah Zarah. And even if it is Avodah Zarah, it's a mashma from some Rishonim that one is mechuyev to give up his own life in order not to worship Avodah Zarah. But does one have the right to put the entire Klal Yisrael in danger, even for something like Avodah Zarah? That's a different ballgame. I mean, there's a run that's mashma, you know, that solos Klal Yisrael shiny. When all of Klal Yisrael is in a sakana, then the rules are different. And the makkah for it would be right here. There's no makkah for this in the Gemara. The Gemara says, Yarag Vayavar. Halacha L'maisa, it's not mentioned either. I'm not mentioning this as Halacha L'maisa. But here, this was a real problem. Mordechai not bowing to Haman, that was the catalyst that started the entire process. That said, Vayibiz Be'enab L'shleich Yad B'Mordechai L'vada. Haman said, he's not going to just go, you know, take his revenge against Mordechai. He gidolos on Mordechai. If Mordechai did it, all Jews are guilty. We're going to kill them all out. This was a real, real sakana. All of Klal Yisrael was in sakana, and it started because Mordechai didn't bow down. Chazal says, the Mordechai should have foreseen this. The public figure, the king commanded, you should bow down to him. And Mordechai is also a prestigious person. The Gemara says, Akolafi amavayish, vakolafi amizbayish. When one embarrasses someone else, he has to pay money, and the amount is assessed based on the one doing the embarrassment and the one on the receiving end of the embarrassment. The bigger the, you know, Mordechai was, he was on a daily adar. Everyone's going to hear about it. The old Haman, you know, he didn't bow down to Haman. It'll make great waves in the kingdom. And of course, Haman's going to hate the Jews. Haman's an Amaleki. He's putting Klal Yisrael on Sakana. It's mashma from the Gemara that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't look on this with favor. The Gemara is mashma that Mordechai was wrong. The Gemara says, Chazi ma'asa li'Yehudi. The Gemara Megillah that we were talking about, you know, take a look at what a Yehudi did to me and take a look what a Yemini did to me. And it's referring to Mordechai. Mordechai didn't bow down to Haman, and look what happened because of it. So it's mashma from the Gemara, take a look what happened because Mordechai didn't bow down. It's mashma that the Gemara is looking upon this with disfavor. So why did Mordechai do it? What was he thinking? What was this cheshma? Doing something, but Klal Yisrael on Sakana. It's a stark akasha.
Miguel Storm says his question.
Miguel Storm brings his question, and the Miguel Storm answers it with a Ramban in his introduction to Sefer Iyev. The Ramban wrote a Sefer on Iyev. In the introduction, the Ramban says this Yisoid. It's very apropos to Sefer Iyev. The Ramban says this, the following Yisoid. When a tzaddik, someone that's known to be a tzaddik, is seen to do something which is against the Torah, and you see it, it's clearly against the Torah. It's clearly wrong. You can't find what? No, the Gemara Brachah says you're supposed to do that on Lekav Schus.
Yeah.
I mean, in this circumstance, there's no mucker. He did it. It's wrong. There's no room to be done on Lukavskos. He says, be a doer. He said, you should know that if you see a tzaddik, it clearly goes against a Dvar Torah, it's because the Bechira was taken away from him. I'll give you an example. from Yehuda and Tamar, the Targum, Yonason, and Parshas Vayeshev, says the Yehuda's Bechira was taken away from him. Yeah. Hashem sent a Malach, Hamamuna la Taiva, the Malach of Taiva. The Targum says Yehuda sees a lady, he thinks she's a Zayna. What does a tzaddik do when he sees a lady that he thinks is a zayna? It says in the Targum that his immediate reaction was to turn away. You don't want to look at her, because to look at a zayna could cause a whole chain of events. Be a doer, you know. Kala gadol mechaverei, yitzra gadol himenu, the greater the person, the greater the yitzra. And the reason why tzaddikim remain tzaddikim is not because they don't have a yitzahara. On the contrary, the yitzahara is even bigger. The reason why they don't do averis is because they don't allow themselves to get sucked into them in the first place. For someone, you know, on a lower level, seeing a zayna might not have the same powerful effect on him as when Yehuda would see a zayna. It's not. That doesn't mean that we're allowed to do it either. But on someone like Yehuda, he's so big, he can't look at a zayna. His immediate reaction was, get out of here, get out of town. And Tamar's davening. She's davening. And she's saying, where the kings of Klai Yisrael going to come from? Where the Gibayrim, the warriors of Klai Yisrael going to come from? He's turning away. Hashem sent a malach. Hashem answered her tefillas. Hashem sent a malach. The malach ha-mamuna al-taiva. The malach of passion. And the malach turned Yehuda back. And once Yehuda was turned in her direction, that's it. It's over. Because a tzaddik avoids these situations by staying far away from them. Once they're in it, kala gadol mechaver, yitzra gadol himenu, it's over. So Ramban says this yisoid, that when you see a tzaddik doing something against the Torah, his bechira was taken away from him.
Every time in
Torah. I said there's always extenuating circumstances. Yaakov Avinu married two sisters. So Ramban says over there they were mutter, it was before Matan Torah.
Well, yeah. There are kids all throughout. There are a lot of cases where tzaddikim did wrong things.
Who are you?
All of them are freshmen.
Yeah. Okay.
A lot of people.
Yeah. You know, the Mepharshim all saying those things that they weren't really
averus. In their free will, they hit the stick.
They weren't averus on our standards. They were averus only because of the lofty standards. Yamash Rabbeinu was never caught not putting on film one day. It's always a yes, of course.
Allah Maisha Messina. What do you mean?
Allah Maisha Messina. So we got them from Maisha.
Right.
But what?
You're throwing around a square. How do you know they're supposed to be square?
Right, Allah Maisha Messina.
Right, so who's Moshe?
Right.
Right.
But. So you see, he did stuff.
I mean, no, I'm saying, but we're talking about blatant averus. Talking averus like blatant averus. It's not averus according to the Madrega. Put in Klai Yisrael and Sakana. Don't Klai Yisrael and Sakana.
Why?
So Megillah Stam says, he uses this Ramban to explain why Mordechai didn't bow down. Mordechai didn't bow down. He would have loved to bow down. He would have bowed down. It's the right thing to bow down. The Gemara says he should have bowed down. The Gemara says he should have bowed down. What was he doing? So either because it wasn't real Avodah Zarah, so it's the right thing to bow down. You know, this is not time for a power struggle. And Mordechai knew this. It wasn't like, he didn't have to be told this. Or even if it was Avodah Zarah, but when you're dealing with all of Klal Yisrael's lives, it's different, the rules are different. Either way. But he couldn't bow down. He couldn't. He tried. He couldn't. Zok to Megillah Starim. That's why it says in the pasuk, "It's so beautiful." Mordechai lo yichrav, lo yishtachave. Mordechai will not bend down. He will not prostrate his stomach. You know why? Because he can't.
Free will was taken.
That's right. Lo yichra means he can't bow down. He can't prostrate himself.
You ever find this anywhere that free will was taken except for by Paro,
Yehuda? No, Yehuda. I gave you an example. But Yehuda's freedom was taken away. Mordechai lo yichra, lo yishtachav. It's almost medayik. The Deek and the Pasuk. A tremendous Kiddush. But you see, the Megillah Esther is like that. The whole Megillah is like a Derech HaTeva. Pasuk Gimel. Vayemer Avdei HaMelech, the servants of the king said, Asher B'Shar HaMelech, they're in the gates of the king, L'Mordechai to Mordechai, Maduah to Ivers Mitzvah HaMelech. Why are you violating the command of the king? This was very strange to them. Like, what's up with this? Why are you violating the palace of the king? There's a Targum Sheni in this whole dialogue. Let's see.
How does this fit with our Vienna's and Auschwitz?
They thought that they didn't know that the king took away the decree. I would assume that's not the type of thing you'd publicize.
No, they just one thing on one person is an exception.
Yeah, no, that's not a wise thing.
Send documents all over the country. Everyone must bow to Haman except for this guy.
It's not wise. They didn't know. I mean, that was a very good question, by the way. It's just, you know, they didn't know. Here. So the Targum Sheni, it's in the back. It's a second. It's a second edition of the Targum. It's much more expanded. So they were asking, it tells us of the dialogue that was going on between Mordechai and the servants.
Who wrote this Targum?
I don't know.
Same person wrote Baal Chemus?
I don't know.
Uncles?
No, it's Don Uncles. It's called Targum Yenison, but I heard it's not really Targum Yenison. It's not really Yenison Ben Uziel.
So what should we write?
Well, this is called Targum Sheni. The regular Targum is Targum, and this one is Targum Sheni.
They both written by the same person?
I don't know. Mamish don't know. There's a dialogue that went on between Mordechai and the servants. And they're asking him, Amahis Gadalta Leino, you became so great and high and mighty that you have to be different than everyone else? Like, why are you greater? We're all bowing down.
First of all, he's a noble and they're servants.
The nobles were also bowing down. Everyone had to bow down. Avdei HaMelech are nobles. That was the level of importance. They served the king. They were the nobles. The slaves were the nobles. They didn't get covered out of being a slave. If you're a slave to a king, then royalty rubs off on you. Why are you doing this? We're all bowing down. You're not going to bow down? Why are you deliberately ignoring the wishes of the king? Because you're more important than we are? We're doing it. You should also do it. So Mordechai called them a bunch of stupid idiots. He said, he's Pesayim, you're dumb, you're stupid. Chas v'leiv, you have no heart. Yeah. He said, you take a look at this Haman. He said, you got a blacksmith. I think he calls him a blacksmith, like it's a lowly job. He's a big Balgaiva. He thinks he's great, but he's nothing more than a dirty coalsmith. And he was born from flesh and blood. He didn't appear in a miraculous manner. Poof, kapoof, you know. He's born from a woman. He's not going to live very long. When he's born, everyone is just crying in pain. He grows up, more pain, more anguish. His days are filled with anguish and anger. In the end, he's going to be dirt. And I got to bow down to that. So he basically called him...
Same thing with the king.
Called him a person.
We bowed down to the king.
You have a difference because the king, Hashem gives cover to the king. Hashem didn't give cover to Haman directly. I mean, indirectly he did, but not directly. Haman was not a melech. I'm going to bow down to him? So I don't have to be important not to bow down to someone. You don't have to be someone special. That's not the reason why I'm not bowing down. The reason I'm not bowing down is not because I'm so chashev, but I think that I'm more important than you. It's because he's a worm. And, you know, as unimportant as I am, I'm not going to bow down to a piece of dirt. Literally. He said, who do I bow down to? I bow down to Hashem. Hashem is truly powerful, he's truly alive, and everlasting. Which is Hashem is everything the people are not. And more. Limitless. He's the only one. He's one, and he's the only one. He's all powerful, And he's the only one that's all powerful. He's in Shemayim, which means he's removed from us. That, you know, we can't access him, we can't touch him. He's a consuming fire. That means anyone that goes up against him, you know, you go, you want to hug a fire, you want to have a wrestling match with a fire, you're going to disappear. The fire will make you disappear. That's what fire does. It consumes anything that comes against it. You're going to go up against Hashem, you'll be, not that Hashem will punish you, you'll become nothing. And not only that, his malachim have the same properties. They're also like fire. You can't even fight a malach. Forget about Hashem. You can't. Malach.
How did Yaakov fight a malach?
He suspended the globe.
What do you mean?
Hashem, he suspended the globe. Taila Eretz. He spread out the ground and he set up the firmament. The Yaakov for a malach only Yaakov could afford a malach. Yaakov's name was changed because he fought with the Malach. Sarisa. Yisrael, Sarisa. Sar means nobility. He was raised up. It means that Yaakov was higher than the level of a Malach in order to beat the Malach. Mm. Most people aren't like that.
Yeah.
That is right. Hashem could blot out the sun. He could bring light in the middle of the darkness. He made the sea with great wisdom and he bordered it with sand. He shouted and salted the sea. Salia, what do you call it? Salianized the sea. He salianized it. He salianized. Sultanated it. He commands the wind that blows the waves.
Why is it a big thing that he salted the sea?
That's a pretty big job. There's a lot of salt in the sea.
It's the godless of a Kaddish Baruch. What do we gain from it? Or what?
We gain a lot from it.
Yeah,
but,
so.
But what's.
Forget. So it's all these things are chok. They're showing you the unlimited power of Hashem and His wisdom. That everything is exactly what the world needs. If the oceans wouldn't be salted, so then the world would not be able. You know, it's part of the whole ecosystem. If one element in creation would have been created slightly off, then everything would topple. So it's a tremendous gvura. That means there's nothing that's not within his power. And chachma.
So
truth is, to answer your question, I'd have to know more about the way salt works in the world. I don't appreciate it as much as I should. No chop, no godless.
It makes but everything taste better. Know about this.
Saltologists.
Everything tastes better, so to speak.
Well, it says tam melech lemeimah. The lashon of the medrash is the tam and the melech. It gives the flavor. Yeah, it adds flavor to life. The winds, and then the underground wellsprings, Hashem controls that they don't flood the entire world. Created the upper heavens. Mordechai keeps going. He created a protective cocoon around the earth. Stars above, the Shemesh, the Ireach, the sun, the moon. The constellations, they all run in front of him. Nothing stops for a moment. That's something you say. Nothing in creation stops for a moment. There's nothing that ever at standstill. Even if something appears at standstill, if you look down into the subatomic particles, you see movement. It's time. The closer you get to the Pnimius or something, the more you see its life. And this is true in the physical, because the physical, Hashem created the physical to match the spiritual. So in a very physical way, you might just take a microscope, take some dead skin, or a rock, or a desk, or a chair, and you could look into the cells. Atoms you can't see with a microscope. You could detect them with an electron microscope. And then you see movement. It's running around. Vast. A lot of power, energy. Because the closer you get to the pneumius of something, the more life, you know, the closer you're getting to the sherish of life. And this is in a purely physical, you know, atoms are physical. Molecules are molecules. Molecules, you could see. Physical. And they run around like right and left, like, you know, doing Hashem's Ratzon. So that's who you should bow down to. You're going to bow down to a piece of dirt. Bow down to Hashem. So then they gave him counsel. They advised him. They said, Mordechai, Mordechai, they had a Kusha Chamura. They were going to slug him up. Mordechai. It's a shtickle tire. We hear it. Makes a lot of sense. But this fact's on the ground. The Shvatim bowed down to Esav. And Haman is a great, you know, he's an Einikol, a descendant of Esav. And you're an Einikol of the Shvatim. And they bowed down to Esav. So what was, you know, where was the shtickle tire then? Esav was also, he's a worm. Esav's a piece of dirt. And you bowed down to Kadosh Baruch, not to, and they did it. And they did it because it was the proper thing to do. If they didn't do it, who knows what Esav would do to them? They did it. They did it. So here also you do it. The king commands you to do it. Mordechai says, really, my great-great-grandfather bowed down to Esav? He said, how many children did Yaakov have when he met Esav? So they start counting. They have to count more than 10. They need to use their toes. And they said, there were 11 because Binyamin wasn't born. Binyamin was born after that encounter. He said, my grandfather never bowed down to Esav. No. Yeah. Binyamin wasn't born. Binyamin never bowed down to anybody. And I don't bow down to anyone. And he said, you know why Binyamin wasn't born then? Binyamin could have been born before. Binyamin wasn't born then because Hashem didn't want every single son of Yaakov to bow down to Esav. So Hashem, this is a paladic medrash. Hashem held Binyamin in the stomach of Rachel in order that Binyamin shouldn't come out before they met Esav. That's why Binyamin was born so late. The original plan should have been that Yaakov would have all 12 Shvatim and then go. Why were they broken up into two groups, 11 and 1? Because one Shevet has to remain. That they're not subservient to Esav, they don't bow down to Esav, they don't pay obeisance to Esav, and they're going to beat Esav.
He was 7.
Seven?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I think the math
looks like it's about 7 years old. And then they're gonna go up to Eretz Yisrael. They're gonna build the Beis Hamikdash, and the Beis Hamikdash is gonna be built in Binyamin's portion. Why? Because the Beis Hamikdash is a place where you bow down to Hashem and no one else. And that's gonna be built in the portion of someone that bows down to Hashem and no one else. You need a place to build the Beis Hamikdash. You can't build the Beis Hamikdash in the other Chalakim, because they bow down to Esav. They're Nachla. It's not Roy. It's not worthy. You build the Beis Hamikdash in the Chaluk of the one that didn't bow. Beis Hamikdash is the place of bowing to Kadosh Baruch Hu and no one else. And that's the Simcha. I don't bow down. Based on this target, we could also understand the future tense of Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachave. That means I didn't, I'm not, I'm never doing it. Why? Shem Sheva Binyamin. Lo yichrav lo yishtachave isn't just limited to this particular instance of bowing down to Haman. Lo yichrav lo yishtachave means, according to the Targum, Mordechai never bows. He doesn't do that. Mordechai is not a bower. Lo yichrav lo yishtachave. He never will bow. What?
What do you mean he couldn't?
For Sheva Binyamin, they don't bow.
Yeah,
but he won't bow. Could you jump out of the top floor of the Empire State Building? Yeah. Could you?
You could, but
we say we can't. Because the alternative is not acceptable to us. You know, the result. So we say that's beyond possibility. We a normal, healthy person. It's not within the realm of possibility. It's not. It's impossible. So I'm not, you know, I can't do it. Not that I don't want to do it, I can't do it. Mordechai cannot bow. It's not going to happen. He's from Binyamin. Binyamin doesn't bow. So we have three pshatim. One pshat is the Achashverosh nullified the decree. Another pshat is Hashem took away his Bechira. And the third is he didn't have a Bechira because he's from Binyamin and Binyamin just doesn't bow. Binyamin doesn't bow. There's a Lashon in the Gemara, Lashon Chazal, which which is very mysterious. Tzadikim mashbiyan es yitzra. I'm going to get to Gemara. It's brought down in conjunction to Nedarim that are made in Chumash. Rabbi Yehuda Yaakov Nedelim, when the Ovis made Nedarim, Tzadikim are mashbiyan es yitzra. They make a shvua to the Yetzer. They bind the Yetzer with a shvua. And that's what, you know, anybody could do that. You know, if we're talking about a regular neder, a guy has a yetzer hara to do something, and he makes a shvua not to listen to his yetzer, you don't have to be a tzaddik to do that. Tzadikim mashbiyan es yitzram, there's an amkus to tzadikim mashbiyan es yitzram. It's not talking about halakhically that they make an oath because they're afraid the yetzer hara is going to get a hold of them. You know, they love something which isn't kosher, so they'll make an oath not to eat it, to reinforce it. Tzadikim don't have to do that. Just don't eat it. They don't have to do that. I once heard this from a friend of mine named Rabbi Schiff, Rabbi Avram Schiff. Tzadikim mashbiyan es yitzram is that tzadikim are different than the common person. The common person, his yetzer hara, makes things possible for him. An aver is possible. And I choose not to do it. We're talking about an average person that does good, you know. He's a good person. Moses law pays law and pays his rent on time, does his mitzvahs, you know. Does his mitzvahs. To him, the aver is our possibility. It is a possibility. The yetzer hara, you know, getting him to pounding that away. I'm just knocking that into him. Aver is our possibility, aver is our possibility. And then the next step is, well, if it's a possibility, go and do it. But even before that, there are possibilities. That's criminal. That an aver should be a possibility, it's a possibility. And then they have the struggle not to do it because they know it's wrong. It's possible, but I know it's wrong. It's like I could do it, but I won't, you know. Tzadikim mashbiyan es yitzra means the yetzer hara, they deal with the yetzer totally different. When somebody has a piece of cake in front of him, if he wants it, he could eat it. If he doesn't want it, not. If he makes a shvua, that choice is removed from him. Lashon shvua means that they don't just prevent themselves from doing averus. To them, averus are beyond the realm of possibility. Mashbiyan es yitzra. It's like a shvua. Not that I'd prefer not to, not that it's not good for me, it's not healthy, it's not going to end up so, you know, it's going to lead me somewhere I don't want to be. It's not possible. Mashbiyan es yitzra. Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachva. He's from Binyamin. It's not possible. It's just not there. Pasuk Dalet. They were saying this to Mordechai every day, that the servants of Achashverosh did not give up. Each and every day they told Mordechai, why are you violating the mitzvah of the king? Why are you violating the mitzvah of the king? Don't do this. He didn't hearken to them. He didn't take their advice. He's not doing it. It's not happening. It doesn't matter what they say. How many times they say it. So then they told Haman, and this is the ultimate in Rishis, you know. They told Haman, why they tell Haman? Lira is they wanted to see Hayam to divrei Mordechai, if Mordechai would remain steadfast in his words. Because Mordechai told them he was Jewish. You know, the Targum that we just read, he told them all about Judaism. He taught them the basic tenets of Judaism, so they knew he was Jewish. Very Jewish. The Targum says they told Haman other things too. What did they tell Haman? They told Haman Mordechai wasn't bowing. Haman might have figured that out on his own. They told Haman why he's not bowing. They said, he's not bowing down to Yavodah. Remember, the Targum holds there were two things. Haman standing next to his Avodah Zarah. And Mordechai wasn't bowing to either of them. So he told Haman, the Avodah Zarah Mordechai is not bowing down to because he's a Jew. And you, he's not bowing down to you because you're a slave. Those two things are guaranteed to set off a major conflagration. That's awesome. These are the two, you want to incite Haman? These are the two best ways to do it. Gewalt, right? Uh-oh. I'll just tell you a Vilna Gaon in the short time remaining to us. Why did Haman have to be told that Mordechai wasn't bowing down? Just look and see. You're walking by, you see Mordechai. He's sitting in a prominent place, and he's not bowing down. This is the Vilna Gaon. And the Vilna Gaon tells us something which is like, it's typical gaiva. Typical gaiva. He said Haman was such a bad gaiva that he couldn't allow himself to look and see that somebody wasn't bowing down to him. Because if he saw it, then he'd have to admit that such a thing was true. Someone could have the gall not to bow down to the great and awesome Haman, and that would be a chink in his armor. So because of his gaiva, he couldn't look in Mordechai, and other people told him. Now whether Haman knew about it or he didn't know about it, he couldn't admit to have known about it. Maybe he did. Maybe out of the corner of his eye, you know, we'll never know. Because Haman didn't tell us. But he can't find out about it on his own. That not. That he has to be told. He has to be told by others. That's the Vilna Gaon.
Well, what just happened? I think I just pressed the wrong button.